Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. All right.
Mm-hmm. Maintenant, s'il vous plaît.
All right. My goodness.
Zut alors. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart.
Sacre bleu.
Where a little French just slipped out in the pre-show. Where every day, I love that we keep saying this, we do what we can to make today make sense. In any language.
In any language, and some days it works better than others. This Molly says it's her favorite day. I think it's my second favorite day behind Fridays. What do you want to know Wednesday? You ask the questions. We provide the answers. That's the way this goes, and we will get a going.
Here we go. Leading us off today is a question from Stuart in Boston.
I'm wondering about people being hesitant to take the vaccine, and I'm wondering if industry might just take care of this for us. For example, might the Red Sox not let you into Fenway Park next year unless you have a vaccine? I wonder if other industries might be able to do the same, like bars and restaurants. Do you think that's legal? Do you think that might just be a solution?
Well, so Stuart, first of all, I know you're from Boston, but who's going to go to Boston and Fenway and see the Red Sox? Because they... Oh, no, I'm just kidding. I'm a Yankees fan.
Why would you?
Look, come on. It's called listener engagement. I don't know what it's called.
Oh, because you're a Yankees fan.
I got to stick up for the Yanks.
Anyway.
I got to stick up for the Yanks.
Yeah.
So first of all, companies can do this, right? They can mandate employees get a vaccine to come to work. It's not recommended, right? What's recommended by a whole lot of government agencies is that they strongly encourage, because once you mandate, then you have to provide exceptions and all of these things, and it becomes a hassle. Mm-hmm. The way I see it playing out is not so much like baseball stadiums, although conceivably, right, or venues, but airlines. And we talked about this before, right, mm-hmm. about how you could see airlines saying, no, you can't get on our plane unless you have a vaccine, and then how do you verify that and all of that, and that becomes a whole different thing. But that's the way I see that playing out, for sure, for sure.
Well, and we probably shouldn't forget schools. I mean, that's how, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that.
That's how a lot of vaccinations are currently enforced in a roundabout way, is that schools say you can't come to school unless you're vaccinated. I do want to do, this is a good point, a good part for a quick mm-hmm. follow-up, because I just kept thinking about Maymay's point about people of color and minorities in this country and the hesitance that they feel based on the long-standing systemic racism. In the medical industry. And yesterday, I talked about this actually on the tech show episode that posted today, because it was a whole crossover situation on every level with Safi Bukal. And there was research out of MIT that showed that of the three vaccine candidates that are being approved in various stages right now, that those vaccines, although they are, you know, 90, 95, 94% effective generally, They were proven in some clinical trials to be less effective in Asian participants in the trials, and that the researchers concluded that they may be less effective, like 90% as opposed to 95%, which is still an effective vaccine, but still in Black and Asian populations specifically, probably because, and this just keeps happening, minorities are not included in the clinical studies enough. And so you basically have vaccines that are tailored for white people's genes, which is just astonishing. Yeah. It's astonishing. But so I wanted to underscore Maymay's point, because the hesitancy comes in a lot of ways and for a lot of reasons. And that's why, actually, when earlier there was a talk about, like, if you got the vaccine, could you get some sort of a green card, right? That's like, I can go anywhere because I have antibodies. Yeah. And there are a lot of ethical concerns that come along with that, as well as a requirement that you be vaccinated before you can, for example, go to Fenway.
Right. Even though, why would you go to Fenway? But yeah, for sure. I think that point that Maymay made to us in the show yesterday about people of color being legit, completely leery of this, is going to play out as we start thinking about, you know, validation of these vaccines. It's going to be a thing. Okay, question number two. Kevin in California, here's what he says. After watching my in-laws install solar and their cul-de-sac became about 90% solar homes, I'm wondering if people staying at home during the pandemic and using more electricity, apologies for the door slam, led to an increase in solar installations. Excellent question. Excellent question.
I know, super interesting. And in fact, our producers went and found the answer, which is that early on, not so much, because a lot of the way that solar is sold is literally door-to-door marketing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in-person installations, but also like in Costco, you know, like walk by and learn about solar. But then yeah. they switched to digital sales. And now, yes, people are definitely the combination of obviously like everybody's bills going up from being at home. And low interest rates is causing an increase in residential solar installations. Plus, it's just gotten more, I think, acceptable.
Right, right. So I keep thinking about going solar, but then there's a whole bunch of like paperwork you got to do and this and that. And I'm like, man, it's a hassle, which I know is lame planet. I know. Don't at me. Come on.
Sorry, but I just did. I just added you already. Here's my tip to you, having just purchased a home with solar attached.
Oh, yeah?
If you can, and we're going to do some stories about this because it's like super fascinating. If you can do it, buy it. Don't lease it. Because the leases are really long, like 20 years. And certainly in my case, because I bought a house with an older lease attached, it's not a good deal. It's not like as cheap as it would be if I purchased it now. And based on the fuss that I kicked up during the purchasing process, it can cause a problem when you want to sell the house with a lease attached. So,
Molly,
like, why do I have to take this bad deal? I don't want this bad.
Get out of here.
I'm a little solar Karen man. Over here being like, but this is just not, these are not good terms. And I don't want to like talk to a manager. Anyway, it's like a super interesting real estate story that I accidentally stumbled on.
Yeah, for sure.
It's fascinating.
For sure. It's a good story. Yeah.
All right. More of your questions, however. Here is a question we have received before, and it's just so timely given the season. And many of you are wondering during this time of year. Take it away, Amy in Seattle.
I am currently having a discussion with my colleagues about trees, fake plastic, aluminum, real trees. And one of my friends is saying that she's never been interested in going and cutting down real trees because you think that's really bad for the environment. And we were wondering if you could help us figure out which is better, because obviously you cut down a tree and that's, you know, one tree that could be sucking carbon, or my mom has had a plastic tree for over 40 years. So she's technically saved 40 trees from being cut down for Christmas tree purposes, but it's a plastic tree, but not in the landfill. Yeah. So anyways, make us smart.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's such a great question that Tony Wagner answered it for us last year, because it's really good, right? I mean, because you're like, oh, I don't want to be sustainable, but oh my God, I want to be whatever. So here's the deal. It's in a way kind of a wash. Depends on how long you use that plastic tree and then how you get rid of it. Because the other part of this is that, apologies for the kids screaming in the background, cutting down a real Christmas tree isn't necessarily bad for the environment because they are sustainable agriculture, right? Those farmers, they grow them every year and plant them every year and then cut them down. And 8 to 10 years later, they give you the new one and all that jazz, right? The catch is, if you keep the fake tree for more than 5 years, you're basically doing okay. You're basically doing okay. So your mom at 40 years is like way on the plus side. Way on the plus
side. Yeah, absolutely. She has more than offset, to use some sustainability language, the plastic that probably went into making that tree. I do think, like, and I don't know if it's climate change. It seems like the trees are not growing. It's like I need to, I am just spitballing here. Mm. I warn you, I'm going to have to duck this later and determine it. But like, there's one Christmas tree farm in our area that was like, we've had supply issues. I think there are like supply issues for trees and tree farms, and they shut down all sales for the entire season last Friday. We're just like, we're closed. Which I thought was kind of
interesting. Well, so I mean, I did a quick item on this on Marketplace a couple of days ago. Christmas tree demand is up something like 29% this year. People staying home, hunkering down, nesting, whatever. So yeah, you could totally see that happening. And also, you know, it's a finite number of trees, right? These are investments that farmers make for 8 to 10 years, where they get no proceeds, on that particular tree, and then they sell it. And now everybody wants one.
So, yeah.
And it seems anyway. Like there, I ducked it real quick, and it does seem to be that there is a 2020 Christmas tree shortage unrelated to the pandemic that's probably only being exacerbated by the pandemic, because everybody, because people are, right, are not only buying them in droves, but they're buying them really early. Reasons range from COVID-19 to the California wildfires.
Oh, wow.
Which is part of the reason. The wildfires, people say, may have caused a ripple effect that contributed to a tree shortage. So they're more expensive.
Climate tree story. It's a climate change story, right?
It is fires, a climate change story.
Fires, yeah, mm-hmm, for sure. Everything really is a climate change story.
I mean, increasingly that is true. Yes.
Yeah.
And finally, I'm very excited about this. It's very mysterious what's about to happen.
I'm a little curious. Yes.
Uh-huh. Kai, ask and ye shall receive. Yesterday on the program, you said you wanted to know where the Marketplace logo came from, and our crack team of producers checked in with, I'm reading this, an expert, and here is what they had to say.
Who is this?
Oh, hello. I hear there's a question that perhaps I can answer. Oh, this is your old boss, by the way, Deborah Clark, formerly the GM. So, Kai, the Marketplace logo, I gather you're not a fan. All right, Mr. Design, can't really answer that. But here's what I remember. About 6, maybe 7 years ago, it came actually after some audience research that we'd done, the first in many, many years. And it was supposed to reflect some of the things we'd learned in that process, although I don't frankly understand how that works. It's supposed to feel loose, conversational, accessible, i.e. the Marketplace voice. Oh. It allowed us to stand out from our corporate overlords at 8 p.m. and still be compatible. And then here's an interesting thing, maybe. The peaks and valleys of the lines tie in with the ups and downs of the stock market. Did you notice that, Mark?
Of course.
And it was a design that allowed us to have consistent but distinct look across the programs. So the same logo, different colors for the different broadcast properties. Marketplace, Morning Report, and Tech. Of course, now we have a whole bunch of different podcasts, so they'll have different looks. That's the price of growth, I guess. Okay, got to go. Let me know if you need anything else. Miss you guys.
All right, so.
Oh, I love
so that
it.
That was the aforementioned Deborah Clark. We talked about her many times. Now our former senior vice president and general manager. Also, I don't buy any of that. I think it's a terrible design.
What?
It invokes none of those things with me. Also, I'm a Marketplace listener. Nobody did any research with me. Didn't want to ask. Come on, man. Terrible. I hate it. This is a hill I'm going to die on. I think it's facile. I think it's the pastels are black. Somebody said it's an M. I'm like, cut it out. And oh, by the way, it's supposed to look like the stock market. No, it doesn't.
It's evocative of not looks like.
Also,
evocative
also,
of.
All you kids get off my lawn.
I think we're going to need to see Kai's complete resume, including the part about the design bona fides.
That's right. That's right. The best writers. What?
You do have Nordic history, though, right? Like, I mean, so some sense of style is built in, I hate to admit.
Wow. I have no sense of style. I can't draw. I can barely dress myself. But I know what I don't like.
Boom.
I don't like this
Tricked
logo.
Tricked ya.
That's where we are. That's where we are.
Seems like a good place to end.
God.
Agree to disagree with the world.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that. Okay, that was What
Amazing.
Do You Want to Know Wednesday? Also, my Amazing. Thoughts on design, for whatever that's worth. That's my new podcast, Kai's Thoughts on Design. Keep sending us your questions, your comments. Also, tell us what you think of the logo. I'm going to the people on this one. That's what I'm doing. Going to the people.
All
if
right.
you like it, tell us. If you hate it, tell us. Tell us why. You know. Just let's get some feedback here. Make me smart at marketplace.org. Emails welcome. Voice memos better. And also we will take logo submissions. I'm opening it up right now.
Oh, snap. It is war. This is amazing. Oh, and I love it. Also an important heads up, which is that next week will be our last week of new episodes for the year. We are taking a little break. For the holidays, don't be mad. We'll still be on Twitter, and we'll be back in January with brand new, like, refreshed, happy feeling, upbeat, maybe even a new logo. Yes. Who knows? Anything could happen. New episodes in January.
I'm down for that. I'm down for that. Do we have a logo? Yeah. Oh, we do have a logo. I like our logo better than the Marketplace logo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make me just Produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Ethan Peretz is hard at work designing a new logo right now. Oh, and Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and our smart speaker skills.
Garrett Lang was in charge today down in the studios in downtown L.A. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Donna Tam is a senior producer wondering what she has gotten herself into. Executive Director of On Demand also probably wondering, and not for the first time, why is Sitar Nieves? Oh, jeez.
Just one question. Why?
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 Why? Oh, my goodness.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.